The next few days were some of the longest the kid had ever endured. He was let out of the cell for a short time each day, but his meals still consisted of bread and water. He could feel himself growing weaker, and there was nothing he could do about it. The doctor came every day, checked his wounds, and changed the dressings. Every time Thurber was in the cell, a guard came in with him, and at least two more stood just outside the door, their rifles ready. The white-haired physician proclaimed the kid's injuries were healing nicely. After a couple of days, he left off the bandage around the head wound, saying it wasn't necessary anymore. The kid saw Carl Drake several times through the barred window in his door, but they weren't let out for their exercise period at the same time again. The kid wondered if one of the guards had reported to the warden that he and Drake had been talking, and Fletcher wanted to break up any budding friendship. On the morning of the fifth day of his imprisonment, the kid was up close to the door of his cell in order to catch the bread when it was shoved between the bars, when two guards approached.
Move back from the door.
He moved all the way to the rear wall of the cell.
You're coming out for breakfast this morning. Don't cause any trouble, and maybe it'll stay that way.
Under the rifles of the two guards, he left the cell and made his laborious way to one of the tables. The coffee had already been poured in wooden cups. The prisoners weren't trusted with crockery, since it could be broken easily and the sharp edges of the pieces could be used as weapons. The kid grabbed a bowl, dipped it in the pot of oatmeal, and sat down at the end of the table. He forced himself not to wolf down the food or gulp the coffee. Taking his time with both, he savored the taste. A few minutes later, someone sat down beside him. The kid glanced over and recognized Carl Drake.
See? I told you they'd let you out sooner or later.
You were right.
If you behave yourself, things probably won't go back to the way they were before. You don't plan on behaving yourself.
You know I'm not Bledsoe. They don't have any right to keep me locked up here.
Well, maybe not, but they've got the bars and the guns. That sort of trumps what's right or wrong.
Bledsoe made it out.
Even if you escaped, you'd be a fugitive from now on.
No. Ben Bledsoe would be the fugitive, which he already is. There are no real charges against me.
You know, I hadn't really thought about that. You'd be free and clear. Unless somebody mistook you for Bledsoe again.
I'd make a point of it to get as far away from New Mexico territory as I could.
Well, that might work, but there's a better way.
What are you talking about, Drake?
Find the real Bledsoe. Bring him back. Show everybody that you're not him.
How long ago did Bledsoe break out?
Couple weeks.
The trail's had a chance to go cold, but I might be able to pick it up again.
You're forgetting something.
What's that?
You can't pick up anybody's trail from in here.
I don't plan to stay in here. You're going to tell me how Bledsoe escaped. If he can do it, I can too, and then I'll go after him.
Sorry, Morgan. I'm not going to tell you anything. Unless you agree that when you bust out of here, I'm going with you.
I'll think about it.
Don't think about it too long. Might take it into my head to go ahead and bust out by myself. Every day I'm in here with Otto is another day he might decide to go ahead and bust me in two.
I thought you convinced him you didn't have anything to do with the rest of your gang getting arrested.
Oh, every day's a new day for Otto. He's not exactly what you'd call right in the head.
I'll let you know by tomorrow.
Yeah, you do that.
A few minutes later, the prisoners were taken back to their cells. The guard named Smithson was one of the pair following the kid to his cell.
It won't do you any good, Bledsoe.
What won't?
Looking for a way out. There isn't any. We're ready now for what you pulled before.
Did the warden send that telegram to my lawyers the way I asked him to?
The warden doesn't tell me what telegrams he sends or doesn't send. Anyway, nobody's gonna fall for that bluff of yours, Bledsoe.
What if it's not a bluff? What if I'm telling the truth?
Then I guess you're out of luck, because you're not going anywhere.
They reached the cell, and the kid shuffled inside. At mid-morning, the kid got a surprise. Several guards showed up at the door of his cell.
Step back, Bledsoe. You're coming out.
The kid stood up from where he'd been sitting on the bunk and moved to the rear wall.
Why? Am I going somewhere?
That's right. The warden wants to see you.
Why?
You think he tells us? He just said to fetch you. We're fetching you.
The guards, except the one who had unlocked the door, had their rifles at their shoulders, aiming through the open doorway at the prisoner.
Come on out.
Taking the short steps forced on him by the leg irons, the kid left the cell. The guards surrounded him, and the little group started toward the mouth of the tunnel, moving slowly. Some of the prisoners watched through the windows in their cells. They didn't know why he was being taken out, but they knew he would get to walk in the sunshine. The kid saw Carl Drake looking at him from one of the cells. Drake's forehead was creased in a frown. He appeared to be worried, and maybe with good reason. He was counting on the kid helping him escape from Hellgate. There was no way of knowing what was going to happen next. The gate guards opened one of the gates, and the kid shuffled through the gap. For the first time in days, he didn't have the stone walls of Hades looming all around and above him. The kid and the guards around him walked between the Gatling gun emplacements and the barracks where the more trusted inmates lived. A moment later, they reached the rear door of the administration building. A couple of guards backed through the door, keeping their rifles trained on the kid.
You fellas must think I'm mighty dangerous.
We haven't forgotten what happened when you busted out before Bledsoe. We had to bury two of our friends.
The guards marched him to Warden Fletcher's office. When one of them swung the door open, it wasn't Jonas Fletcher, the kid saw sitting behind the warden's desk. It was Fletcher's daughter, Jillian.
Miss Fletcher? Where's the warden?
He had to go over to our house. My mother sent me to get him. He'll be back shortly, I'm sure. You can leave the prisoner here. I'll keep an eye on him while we wait.
Begging your pardon, miss, but you know we can't do that.
I don't see why not. What could he possibly do with all you guards waiting right outside the office?
Oh, you don't know how dangerous this man is, Miss Fletcher.
He already has leg irons on. You could shackle his hands, too.
Nope. I'm sorry, miss, can't do it.
For God's sake, I'm giving you an order.
I don't take orders from you, Miss Fletcher. I take them from your father.
He's going to hear about this disrespect.
Well, you go right ahead and you tell him whatever you think you need to, miss. We're still not leaving this murdering outlaw alone with you.
All right, you can stay.
Jillian pointed to the chair in front of the desk.
You might as well sit down, Mr. Bledsoe. My mother isn't well, so even though I expect my father back shortly, there's really no telling how long he'll be.
The guard closest to the kid put a hand on his shoulder and shoved him into the chair.
Yeah, sit, Bledsoe. And don't budge. If you know what's good for you.
I'm sorry that your mother is ill, Miss Fletcher.
You speak when you're spoken to, Bledsoe.
No, that's all right.
Jillian looked at the kid.
That's an odd sentiment for a prisoner to have.
Not really.
Most of the prisoners here hate my father.
I wasn't talking about your father. I don't have any grudge against your mother. I've never even met the lady. What's wrong with her?
Bledsoe.
No, really, it's all right. She has consumption. Father thought the air here in New Mexico might help her, but so far, it hasn't.
I'm sorry to hear that. If your father would get in touch with my lawyers in San Francisco, they might be able to recommend a specialist who could help your mother. They donate a considerable amount of money to various hospitals around the country in my mother's name, so they know a lot of doctors.
Blast it, Bledsoe! You stop spouting that hogwash!
You're very well spoken for an inmate. What happened to your mother?
She was murdered by outlaws, the sort of men that everyone around here seems to think I am. If you really knew me, you'd know how preposterous that is.
What the hell is going on here?
Jillian looked up sharply, a frightened expression on her face, and started to get to her feet. At the same time, the guard standing immediately behind the kid's chair turned toward Fletcher.
You said to bring Bledsoe in here, Warden. We fetched him from Hades, but when we got here, you'd stepped out of the office for a minute.
Then why did you bring him in here where my daughter was?
We didn't know Miss Fletcher was in here, sir.
Didn't one of the clerks tell you?
None of the clerks was at their desk when we came in.
Incompetence. I'm surrounded by incompetence. Oh, Jillian, what do you mean by staying here in my office? I thought you were going back with me to the house. I was halfway there before I realized you weren't just lagging behind. You were nowhere to be seen.
I couldn't stand it anymore. You leave me over there to take care of her, to watch as she coughs her life out and wastes away to nothing. I just had to get out for a few minutes.
By God, girl, don't take that tone of voice with me.
Why not? Are you going to throw me into Hades with the rest of the damned souls?
Go back to the house. Your mother needs you.
Of course she does. Lord knows she won't get any real comfort from her husband while she's dying.
Get out.
She left, scurrying out of the office, but not before casting a sympathetic glance toward the kid. The kid stayed put as the warden went behind the desk and lowered himself wearily into the chair.
She Bledsoe, have you changed your mind?
About what? The fact that I'm not Bloody Ben Bledsoe?
Still hopping on that, are you? Give it up. With that beard, you look even more like your old self now than you did when Haggerty brought you here. No, I was talking about the loot from all those robberies you pulled.
I don't know a thing about it.
You're a damned fool. You know you'll never get out of here again. That money can't do you any good now. The only possible benefit you might get from it is if you reveal where it is. That might get you a little clemency somewhere along the line.
Or get me hanged. Like Haggerty said, those bankers won't let me be convicted of murder and strung up as long as there's a chance they might get their money back. But once they do, they won't give a damn about me. Telling you where the money is would be the same thing as signing my death warrant. But it's all moot anyway, because I don't know where the money is. I'm not Bledsoe.
Being stubborn's not going to do you any good.
On the contrary, it's all I have left. Except, did Ben Bledsoe know Latin? Cogito ergo sum.
Well, now, that's mighty fancy talk. Do you know what it means?
I think, therefore, I am. Or veni, vidi, vici. I came, I saw, I conquered.
So you think by throwing around a few Latin phrases, you're going to convince me you're not Ben Bledsoe. Is that the idea?
How many outlaws would know something like that?
Not many, I'll grant you. But Bledsoe would, since before he took up the Owl Hoot Trail, he was Professor Benjamin Bledsoe and taught law at William & Mary in Virginia.
Really? I didn't know that about Bledsoe.
Here's something else you don't know. I'm tired of pussyfooting around with you, mister. We're going to end this. Take him outside. Get his shirt off him and tie him to the whipping post.
You can't do that.
I can do anything I want. I'm the warden here. Inside this prison, my word is law, and you should have thought of that before you defied me, Bledsoe.
Come on. Don't make this any worse than it has to be.
This is inhuman.
So is robbing banks. So is murdering guards. Take him.
The guard reached for the kid's other arm, but before he could grasp it, the kid suddenly twisted and struck out at the man already holding him. His fist whipped around and crashed into the guard's jaw, knocking him loose. The kid lunged forward, trying to get across the desk so that he could reach Fletcher, but Fletcher was ready for him. The man's hand closed around a heavy paperweight on the desk and brought it up with blinding speed. The paperweight smashed against the side of the kid's head and knocked him sprawling on top of the desk. The next instant, several pairs of strong hands grabbed him and jerked him upright. A fist hit him low in the back. A kidney punch sent pain stabbing through him. He arched his back, and as he did, another fist buried itself in his belly.
Enough! He doesn't have any more fight in him. Get him out of here and string him up to the post. I'll be out there in a minute to deal with him myself.
Warden, are you sure you don't want one of us
I said I'll deal with him myself. It's time this outlaw scum was taught a lesson. And by God, I'm going to enjoy doing the teaching.
Still stunned, the kid was aware the guards were dragging him outside. But he couldn't summon the strength to fight anymore. His muscles wouldn't obey his commands. The toes of his shoes plowed furrows in the dust as the guards hauled him around one of the barracks. He saw a thick beam standing upright in the ground. About 50 yards past it, backed up to the stone wall that ran around the prison, was a small, squarish house built of rocks. The kid thought it was probably Fletcher's residence. His head ached intolerably from the blow with the paperweight. He tried to ignore the pain. He had a choice of agonies: his head, his belly, his kidneys, the wound in his side. They reached the upright beam that served as a whipping post. A metal hook was attached to it about 7 feet above the ground. The kid had a pretty good idea what it was for. A couple of guards grabbed his shirt and ripped it off. In other circumstances, the warmth of the sun would have felt good on his bare chest and back. The kid knew what was coming, but he was too battered to fight back. Outnumbered as he was, it wouldn't have done him much good to put up a fight. He regretted not being able to plant his fist right in the middle of some of those smug faces surrounding him. One of the guards snapped a pair of shackles around his wrists. They were connected by a short length of chain. A longer length was also attached to the shackles. Another guard took it and tossed it over the hook above the kid's head. He pulled on it and forced the kid to raise his arms. The kid wound up facing the post with his arms stretched above his head as far as he could reach. At the same time, he'd been forced up on his toes so that his stance was painfully awkward and a lot of weight was on his shoulder sockets. He felt his bones and muscles groaning under the strain. He twisted his head to look at the men around him.
You know this isn't right. Some of you have to know I'm not Bledsoe.
We just do our jobs, mister.
You look a hell of a lot like that bastard Bledsoe to me.
They began to move back, and even though the kid couldn't see Fletcher, he knew the warden was coming. Fletcher circled the post so he could look at the kid. He had taken off his coat and tie, but still wore his vest. His shirt sleeves were rolled up a couple of turns. He carried a coiled black snake whip in his right hand.
I'd tell you that you have one last chance to avoid this by admitting where you stashed the loot, Bledsoe, but it would be a lie. You're getting this whipping no matter what you tell me now. You've got it coming. Still, I might be inclined to be a little more merciful if you cooperate.
I can't tell you something I don't know. The only thing I have to say to you, Fletcher, is go to hell.
Well, you're about to be more convinced than ever that's where you are.
He let go of the whip except for the handle. It uncoiled and slithered around his feet. Nodding slowly, Fletcher moved out of the kid's line of sight again. Silence hung over Hellgate as the kid waited. The whip struck him at an angle across the back and cut into his skin and flesh, leaving behind a streak of hellish fire that made the kid surge forward against the post.
That's just the beginning.
He jerked it back so the weighted tip popped just as it touched the kid's left shoulder blade. The song of the whip continued its grim tune. Fletcher varied his brutality, moving the black snake around so that it left a crisscrossing grid of bloody stripes on the kid's back, which was also dotted with wounds from the tip that oozed crimson. At first, the kid tried to hold himself upright, but as the torment continued, the sea of pain in which he found himself engulfed him so completely that all he could do was hang limply from the shackles attached to the whipping post. Somewhere in his brain, a part of his mind numb to the agony, wondered if the prisoners inside the cavern called Hades could hear what was going on. They couldn't see it. The whipping post was shielded from the tunnel mouth by one of the barracks, but it was so quiet in the prison compound that they had to be able to hear the whip popping and slashing. He wanted to scream in agony. The prisoners would have been able to hear those cries for sure. He swallowed the cries again and again because he didn't want to give Fletcher the satisfaction of hearing them, but the screams were coming closer and closer to escaping.
That son of a bitch!
The kid's eyes snapped open at the sound of the familiar voice. He saw her standing in front of him, a look of fierce anger on her face. She wore jeans and a buckskin shirt, and her hat hung behind her head by its chin strap. Her thick blonde hair fell to her shoulders and framed her beautiful face. She looked much like she had the first time he had met her, right down to the holstered six-gun strapped around her hips.
Rebel.
Don't let that bastard win, Conrad. If I could, I'd plug the varmint right between the eyes. You'll have to do it for me. Promise me you will, one of these days, Conrad.
I promise.
She moved a step closer to him and held up a hand.
I miss you so much.
She reached toward him as if she wanted to brush her fingers across his cheek. He ached for her touch, strained forward so that for the first time in more than a year, the two of them could make contact. He wished he could kiss her. He knew the sweetness of her lips would take away all his pain. Though they strained toward each other, she couldn't quite seem to touch him. An expression of deep sadness came over her face.
I have to go now, Conrad. Be strong. Don't you let him win. You have to get out of here. You have to get out.
She was gone, and the strength he had drawn from the sight of her disappeared with her. Bitterness flooded through him. She hadn't really been there at all, he realized. She hadn't returned to him, however briefly, from beyond the wall of tragedy and death. It was all his feverish imagination. It was over, all over, and despair welled up inside him. Something cool touched his face, something smooth and soft and comforting. The hand of the woman he loved. It was a fleeting thing, there and then gone, but it was enough. Even in his terrible state, the kid knew some things should not be questioned, only accepted, embraced, clung to the power of hope and love. His faith was restored, and with it came a terrible thirst for justice and vengeance. His head fell forward, and darkness closed around him. He woke up to the touch of something cool on his face, but it was a wet cloth, not ghostly fingers. It felt good. The kid embraced that slight bit of comfort and tried to ignore the terrible pains that racked the rest of his body.
You're awake, huh? Just last year, old Bledsoe. You don't want to be moving around much, and you sure as hell don't want to roll over onto your back.
Where?
You're in the infirmary. The warden wanted to throw you back in your cell, but I told him you'd die if he did that.
Thanks.
Oh, it wasn't a lie. He beat you to within an inch of your life, and that inch would have slipped away without the proper care. You lost so much blood from your back and from the wound in your side that it opened up again. There was a puddle of the stuff around your feet when they brought me to the whipping post. I cleaned you up and did what I could for you. But I'm afraid you're going to have some scars on your back.
The kid lifted his head a little so he could look around. He was lying face down on a narrow mattress on an iron bedstead, in a room with bare walls and a single high window with iron bars set into it. Several other beds were in the room, but they were empty. The kid still had the shackles on his wrists.
Don't they know I'm too beat up to go anywhere?
They know. But it's the warden's orders that the irons stay on. He's not taking any chances with you, whoever you are.
What do you mean? You know I'm not Ben Bledsoe?
What happened to your left ear? The top of it is gone.
An outlaw used his knife to cut off part of my ear while he and his gang were holding me for ransom.
When did that happen?
Years ago. Go get Fletcher and show it to him. That'll prove I'm not Bledsoe. Unless... No, that's crazy. Bledsoe's ear doesn't look like this, does it?
It didn't when it busted out of here. There's no telling what might have happened to him while he was gone. It was more than a month before you were caught and brought back here, you know.
The wound on my ear is a lot older than a month.
Well, it looks older than that to me, all right. But you have to understand, I can't prove that it is.
Of course you can. It's your medical opinion. It's proof. It would stand up in a court of law.
In case you haven't figured it out yet, my friend, in this place, if it doesn't convince Warden Fletcher... It doesn't prove a damn thing.
You can tell him. You have to tell him.
Yeah, maybe I will. But even if I do, I've got a hunch it won't really matter.
Tell Miss Fletcher.
Jillian? Why would I want to do that?
Because she already has doubts that I'm Bledsoe. Convince her of the truth, and then both of you can try to persuade her father that I'm not lying.
Sorry, but I'm not saying anything to that girl. The warden doesn't like it when she takes any interest in the prisoners. Doesn't like it one little bit. Getting her involved any more than she already is would just turn him against you that much more.
What do you mean, any more than she already is?
That's right. You'd passed out by then. I guess Jillian found out somehow what was going on. She came running out, screaming at her father, and tried to take the whip away from him. He raised holy hell right back at her and told her she was forbidden to leave their house. That won't sit well with her. That young lady has a mind of her own, and she doesn't mind expressing it.
What happens now?
You lay there and let that medicine I spread on your back do its work. That's what happens now. I cleaned the wound in your side, took some stitches in it, and bandaged it again. Maybe it'll stay closed better this time. I hope so.
I'm chained to the bed, aren't I?
Yes, but you don't need to go anywhere. You need to rest.
For how long?
You'll be here for a few days anyway. Maybe a week or more. Just don't get any fancy ideas about taking advantage and trying to get away. There are two guards right outside the door, and will be that many around the clock as long as you're here.
I still wish you'd say something to Fletcher about my ear.
I'll think about it, but I can't guarantee anything. I don't want to get on the warden's bad side any more than anybody else around here does.
He's a lunatic. A cruel, ruthless lunatic. You know that, don't you?
I don't know anything. Except that I want to draw my pay and not bring any trouble down on my head. That's what I know, Bledsoe.
Kid Morgan was in the infirmary at Hellgate Prison for 10 days. Part of that time, he suffered from a fever brought on by infection from his numerous wounds. Dr. Thurber said the fever had to run its course, and eventually it did, breaking during the night. When the kid woke in the morning, his bedding was drenched from the cold sweat that had leached the sickness out of him. By the time the guards came to take him back to Hades, he was weaker than a mountain lion cub, but his head was clear. The wounds on his back had scabbed over, and after examining them that morning, Thurber had declared they were healing nicely. So was the bullet gash in his side. The cut on his head from Haggerty's gun was all right now, leaving only a small scar.
Try not to get into any more trouble. You've already lost more than your share of blood.
The kid nodded. His beard was full, which he supposed made him look more like Bloody Ben Bledsoe than ever. He was convinced Thurber doubted he was the outlaw, and so did Gillian Fletcher. It would have been a good start on ultimately winning his freedom, but he wasn't going to wait for that. The whipping he'd received at the hands of Jonas Fletcher convinced him the warden would never believe him. And as had been pointed out to him more than once, Fletcher's word was law. If he stayed in Hellgate for the months or years it might take to get out through legal means, Fletcher would kill him. He had to escape as soon as he had his full strength back. There was no other answer. When the guards marched him into Hades, the man-made cavern was empty except for other guards. The prisoners were locked up in their cells. The kid wanted to talk to Carl Drake as soon as he could, but he'd have to wait for that opportunity. He walked slowly into the number one cell, the door of which stood open, waiting for him. The kid stepped inside.
Next time the warden asks you a question, Bledsoe, maybe you better answer him.
The kid sat down on his bunk and didn't say anything. He was tired of arguing with those people. He'd half expected he'd be put back on bread and water, but when evening rolled around, he'd been taken out of the cell for supper. He was shuffled to the tables and given a bowl of stew. A minute later, Drake appeared beside him and sat down without waiting to be invited.
How you doing, kid?
I've been better. But I reckon I've been worse.
Hard to believe anybody could be worse off than you were after that whipping without being dead.
You couldn't see what happened from in here.
No, but some of the trustees could from their barracks. They talked about it a little when the guards couldn't hear. They said Fletcher whipped you until your back was nothing but blood.
It wasn't quite that bad. Plenty bad enough, though.
Tell you the truth, I figured we'd never see you in here again. Word filtered in that you were healing up, but I wasn't gonna believe it till I saw you with my own eyes. You don't look very good, but that's still a whole heap better than dead.
You still want to get out of here?
Of course I do. You want to throw in with me?
As soon as I get my strength back. Then, whatever you have in mind, as long as it stands a decent chance of getting me out of here, count me in.
All right. All right, now you're talking. The two of us can make it.
I told you I'd get even with you for double-crossing us.
I don't know. I didn't.
Otto wasn't listening, and as the kid looked on, he knew that in his current condition, he couldn't do anything to stop the huge bullet-headed outlaw. As Drake got to his feet, Otto drew back a big foot and swung it at Drake in a vicious kick. Drake ducked under the kick, which would have broken his jaw if it had landed. He reached up and grabbed Otto's foot. He twisted the leg to make Otto fall to the ground. He landed flat on his back, but before Drake could do anything else, several guards arrived and leveled their weapons at the men.
Break it up, you two! Now!
Otto clambered to his feet and backed away. He pointed a long, blunt finger at Drake.
This ain't over, you bastard! It ain't over by a long shot!
Drake came back to the table where the kid sat and lowered himself to the bench. He looked shaken.
You see what it's like? I knew something like this is gonna happen sooner or later. I'm just lucky he didn't bust my skull open or break my back before somebody stopped him. You can see why it's important to me that we get out of here just as soon as we can. It's my life we're talking about.
Mine too. I'll let you know as soon as I'm strong enough.
You make it soon. Very soon.
Another week went by, although it seemed more like a year to the kid. He regained some of his strength. The meager, monotonous rations and the lack of exercise made it difficult for him to recover fully. The delay gave him a chance to talk to Drake several times, and during those conversations, the kid began to understand how Ben Bledsoe had gotten out of that hellhole.
I reckon you noticed it doesn't get real smoky in here. even with these torches burning all the time.
Yeah. There are vent holes drilled in the ceiling, all the way to the top of the cliff, I suppose.
Yeah, that's not all. There aren't enough of those holes to carry all the smoke away. But back in the corner, there's a natural chimney. They either uncovered it when they were blasting this place out, or the blasting itself opened a crack in the earth that runs all the way to the surface.
I haven't seen anything like that, and I've been looking.
That's because the way the wall juts out and curves around, you can't spot it if you're more than 3 or 4 feet from it. Especially as bad as the lights is in here. You look for a spot where a couple guards are always standing, not moving. That's where it is.
Fletcher keeps guards there all the time?
Yeah.
Then how did Bledsoe get past them?
One of the trustees smuggled in a knife to Bledsoe. He got out of his cell one night by pretending to be sick.
I'm surprised any of the guards fell for that old trick.
No, it wasn't a trick. The trustee smuggled in something he stole from Doc Thurber that made Bledsoe puke his guts out. That didn't stop him from knifing a guard, getting his hands on a rifle, and shooting his way past the men at the chimney. He started climbing out.
Why didn't the guards who were still down here just shoot up the chimney and stop him?
Because it takes a sharp bend about 20 feet in. Bledsoe must have gotten around that bend before they could open fire. They tried ricocheting some slugs up the chimney until Fletcher got here and ordered them to stop. He didn't want Bledsoe killed, just stopped.
Because of the loot.
What?
Go on.
Well, there's not much else to say. Bledsoe climbed all the way to the top and got out. That's the last anybody seen of him. Nobody knows for sure if he was wounded. Well, they found some blood in the chimney, but that could have been from the guard whose throat he cut.
Why didn't Fletcher send men up top to be waiting for Bledsoe when he got there?
He tried. But because of the terrain, it takes about 20 minutes for anybody to get from here to the top of the cliff. By the time they got there, Bledsoe was out and gone.
One of the guards told me they'd closed off Bledsoe's escape route.
Yeah, Fletcher has 2 men up there around the clock now. I've heard rumors that he's considered walling up the crack down here, but he doesn't want to do that because it vents out so much of the smoke.
That smoke would make the climb pretty bad.
Yeah, but breathing a little smoke for a while is a lot better than being stuck in here.
So if both ends of that natural chimney are guarded now, I don't see how you plan for us to use it to get out.
I didn't say it'd be easy. The trick is to take the boys up top by surprise. We can deal with them if they don't know we're coming.
How do you figure on doing that?
We have to get out of our cells and kill the guards on this end without raising a ruckus.
You're still not telling me anything.
Otto's gonna provide a distraction for us.
How's he going to do that? And why would he help you? He hates you.
No, not right now, he doesn't. You have to understand, Otto's like a little kid. One day he can want to wring your neck, and the next you can talk him into being your best friend if you know how to handle him. I know how to handle him.
You're putting a lot of faith in that.
Well, I've always been a good planner. The gang I led pulled off some complicated jobs.
Yes, I can tell what a good planner you are by the fact that you're stuck in here with me.
Hey, everybody runs out of luck sooner or later, no matter how good they are. You want to hear the rest of this or not?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so Otto's going to start making a big ruckus at breakfast tomorrow. Big enough that all the guards except the two at the chimney will have to pitch in to stop him. Now that's when we jump them, take their guns, and climb out. If you think you're up to it. If you're not, I'll talk to Otto and try to get him to wait. Might not be easy, though.
I'm up to it. But won't those guards see us coming as we're shuffling along toward them?
We'll move faster than that.
Drake rested a closed hand on the table and opened it part of the way for a second, just enough for the kid to catch a glimpse of a small key.
That'll unlock our leg irons.
How'd you get that?
One of the trustees stole it while I was cleaning the guard's barracks. He smuggled it in here in a pot of oatmeal. I made sure I got to the pot first and knew where to dip my bowl.
The same trustee who smuggled the knife to Bledsoe?
No, that fella... Well, he met with an accident not long after that, I heard. Figured Fletcher probably killed him with his bare hands.
How did you get this one to go along with the scheme?
That was easy enough. His brother was the one who helped Bledsoe escape. He doesn't care about anything anymore except getting back at Fletcher.
What about Otto?
I promise that once we escape, we'd put together a gang and break him out too. Of course, that's not gonna happen.
It still sounds like an awful long shot to me.
Look, nobody claimed it'd be easy. But it's your best chance to get out of here. And if you'd rather stay and see what happens next time Fletcher takes it into his head to beat what he wants out of you, you're welcome to it.
I didn't say that. I'm with you, Drake. I just don't want us to get killed.
Even if we do, it's better being locked up in here for the next 20 years or more. You really want to do that? You think you could make it that long? Anyway, you say you make it, and they finally let you out when you're an old man. You'd have nothing, nobody, and the only thing you could do would be to crawl off somewhere and die. Is that what you want?
No.
Then stick with me. We'll get out, I know it.
Tomorrow morning, you say?
That's right. You be ready?
I'll be ready.
As he lay on his bunk after waking up the next morning, the kid took stock of himself. His wounds were healed for the most part, although a few small scabs remained here and there. His head was clear. He wished he were a bit stronger, but he knew that wasn't going to happen until he escaped from Hellgate and could get some better food, along with fresh air and sunshine. And a razor to scrape the damn beard off his face. He didn't want to resemble Bloody Ben Bledsoe anymore. As he sat up, he thought about everything he and Drake had discussed the day before. Drake's plan still struck him as sketchy, but the kid hadn't been able to come up with anything else. There was one major flaw that Drake hadn't mentioned. The whole thing wouldn't work unless both he and Drake were in the same group when the guards brought the prisoners out for breakfast. Otto had to be out of his cell then as well. The three of them were often in the same bunch, but not always. The kid put his shoes on and went to the little barred window in the door to watch what was going on outside. The guards were already taking some of the prisoners out of their cells. As the kid looked on, Drake's cell was unlocked. The guards worked their way closer to the rear wall of Hades. Otto came out and shuffled sullenly toward the mess tables, surrounded by guards. Two out of three, the kid thought. Now, if they just came for him. A minute later, a couple of guards approached the kid's cell. They set the bar aside.
Back off!
The kid moved away.
All right, out with you.
He came out and walked slowly toward the tables. Otto had taken a seat at the table closest to the tunnel mouth, while Drake was at the one farthest back and closest to the natural rock chimney that was their escape route out of there. Without being too noticeable, the kid glanced toward the place Drake had told him about. He couldn't spot any opening in the rock wall, but he did see a couple of guards standing in that area with rifles tucked under their arms. They didn't move while the other guards were bringing out the prisoners for breakfast. That had to be it, the kid thought. There was no other reason for those guards to be back there in the far corner of Hades. The guards let prisoners sit where they wanted to during meals, as long as they didn't cause any trouble. None of them paid any attention as the kid drifted over to the table where Drake was sitting and sat down beside him. Drake gave him just the barest glance and nod. No one would have noticed the reaction if they weren't looking for it. The kid saw it and knew the plan was on. Proceeding as normally as possible until the time came to make their move, the kid grabbed one of the wooden bowls and dipped it into the pot of oatmeal. As he started to eat with his fingers, he glanced up and was shocked to see Gillian Fletcher coming toward him, flanked by a couple of guards.
What the hell?
I don't know. Just take it easy.
I will, but I don't know about Otto.
The kid knew what Drake meant. Otto was too simple-minded to be able to count on him adjusting to new developments like Gillian's unexpected appearance. He might well carry on as planned, despite the young woman's presence. All the guards were looking at Gillian and not paying close attention to the prisoners. Because of that, Drake was able to put his hand on the bench between him and the kid for a second. When he took it away, the key to the leg irons lay there. The kid covered it up immediately with his own hand.
Mine are loose already. Unlock yours.
Trying to keep his movements as unobtrusive as possible, the kid drew his legs up and reached down quickly, like he was just scratching his calf or something. With the deft touch that enabled him to be a skillful gun handler, he found the keyhole by feel, thrust the key in, and turned it in a matter of seconds. The leg irons opened around his left ankle. That was all he managed to do before Gillian arrived at the table and looked at him.
Mr. Bledsoe, I want to talk to you about...
Otto surged to his feet, grabbed the still half-full pot of hot oatmeal from the table, and smashed it over the head of the nearest guard. The guard collapsed. Otto grabbed his rifle, but didn't try to fire it. Instead, he grasped it by the barrel and used it as a club as he waded into the other guards. Instantly, the area around the front tables was a confused melee as other prisoners joined in the fight and more guards rushed in from all over the tunnel. But not the ones guarding the chimney or the men who had accompanied Gillian Fletcher into Hades. Drake sprang up from the bench, holding the leg irons he had unlocked from both ankles earlier. He swung the heavy chain and irons like a mace. With the two guards out of the way, Drake dropped the leg irons and lunged at Jillian. Drake wrapped one arm around Jillian's waist and clamped his other hand over her mouth so she couldn't scream and alert the men rushing to break up the fight that something else was going on. He started dragging her toward the rear wall of the tunnel.
Come on!
The kid jerked the unlocked leg iron from his ankle, scooped up the irons Drake had dropped, and ran after them. He didn't like what was happening, but he knew he was closer to getting out of Hellgate than he had been since he got there. Maybe he could convince Drake to let Jillian go once they'd gotten past the guards at the chimney. Those two men saw them coming, but they couldn't shoot with the warden's daughter in the line of fire. Drake had Jillian clutched in front of him, using her as a human shield. Before the guards could yell for help, the kid sprang forward, swinging the leg irons.
Damn good work. I knew you'd be a fighter, kid. Now grab one of those rifles and head on up to the chimney.
Let the girl go.
When we get to the top, if they know she's with us, they won't dare fire up the chimney at us.
Drake was right, of course. The kid picked up one of the Winchesters dropped by the guards and slid into the crack in the rock. As Drake had explained, it was hard to see until you were right at the opening. The crack in the earth ran upward at a sharp angle. The kid had to wedge his shoulders into it. He started to climb, bracing himself between the stone walls. Morning sunlight shining into the opening at the top filtered down and lit the way for him. He made it to the turn and worked his way around it. The chimney ran almost straight up and down from there, with only a slight angle to it. He had his shoulders and back pressed to one wall, his feet to the other, and inched his way upward. He glanced down and saw Jillian's terrified, tear-streaked face as she pulled herself around the bend in the chimney. Drake had to be right behind her. The kid kept climbing. He had covered half of the 80 feet above him. 40 feet more to the top. The guards on duty atop the cliff might have heard the commotion in Hades, or they might not be aware that anything was going on. Most likely, they probably weren't expecting an armed, escaping prisoner to clamber out of the narrow hole. The kid knew taking them by surprise was really the only chance he had. Getting his feet under him on what had become a mostly moderate slope, he scrambled upward as fast as he could go. The light was barely blocked off as one of the guards leaned over the opening and thrust the barrel of his rifle through it. The kid found himself looking down that barrel and knew the spooked guard might start shooting at any second. Instinct and superb reflexes, despite his long confinement, allowed the kid to fire first. The guard jerked back out of sight. The kid levered another round into the Winchester's chamber and clawed his way to the surface. He emerged from the hole in the top of the cliff and threw himself onto his belly. A shot blasted at that instant, the bullet whipping over his head, missing him by no more than 6 inches. Lying on his belly, he triggered a round at the second guard. The .44-40 slug ripped through the man's thigh and knocked him off his feet. His rifle went flying. The kid jerked his head from side to side, looking for the other man. Relief went through him as he spotted the man lying on the ground a few yards away, clutching a bullet-shattered shoulder. The kid felt an unexpected pang of sympathy as he recognized the man as Smithson. He was glad his shot hadn't killed Smithson. The kid got to his feet and swung the Winchester in his hands back and forth to cover both wounded guards.
It's clear.
Jillian emerged from the hole, followed closely by Drake. The first thing he did was snatch up one of the rifles. Now that Drake was armed too, the kid thought it would be safe for him to take a second look around at their surroundings. The mouth of the natural chimney had a cluster of small boulders around it. The heavily wooded slope of a mountain rose to his left. The kid thought that was west. To his right, about 15 feet away, was the sheer drop-off of the cliff, running north and south farther than the eye could see. That was why it took so long for guards to get up there, the kid realized. They had to ride a long way to get to a trail that led to the top of the cliff. The pair of saddled horses Smithson and the other guard had ridden to the top were tied to small trees nearby. The kid was mighty glad to see them. Those horses represented freedom.
Come on, Drake, let's get out of here.
In a minute. We got time.
He turned to Jillian and caught hold of her arm.
You bitch. I told you what had happened to you if you let out a peep while we were climbing up here.
Let her go, Drake. You're out. You don't need a hostage anymore.
Hell, I don't. Fortune dropped the warden's daughter right in my lap. You reckon I'm gonna turn down that gift?
You said you'd let her go.
Well, I changed my mind. Just for playing that little trick she did, she's coming with us.
Drake shoved Jillian at the kid.
Get her on one of those horses and climb up behind her. I'll finish up here.
The kid was about to ask him what the hell he meant by that when Drake swung up the rifle he held. A slug drove into Smithson's forehead. With his hands full of Jillian, the kid couldn't stop Drake before the man worked the rifle's lever and blasted another shot through the other guard's skull.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
Making sure there's nobody to tell him which way we went. As well as getting a little payback for the way I was treated down there in Hades. Don't lose any sleep over these guards, kid. Fletcher's Satan. The guards are his little imps. They had it coming. I told you to get that girl on a horse, unless you'd rather me do it.
I'll do it. Come on.
The kid turned toward the horses. He kept a hand around her arm to make sure she didn't get away. Even though it sickened him to admit it, he knew Drake was right. Having Jillian with them would make their pursuers a lot more cautious and less eager to start shooting. He told himself he would keep her safe for the time being, and they could release her later. A glance behind them revealed that Drake was busy rolling boulders over the opening to block any of the guards from climbing up after them. It must have been discovered that they had escaped. The kid and Jillian reached the horses.
Just cooperate for now. I won't let him hurt you.
You can't stop him. He's a monster.
We'll get away from him. There's no reason we have to stay together.
He had agreed to help Drake escape, but now they were quits. They didn't owe anything to each other anymore. Of course, Drake might not see it that way, especially where Jillian was concerned. The kid would deal with that when the time came. He wanted to put as much distance between him and Hellgate Prison as he could. He urged Jillian to climb up on one of the horses, jerked the animal's reins loose, and swung up behind her. Drake untied the other horse and mounted it.
Let's go!
The kid followed. There was nothing else to do.